It's been 42 years since Jackie Robinson broke the color barrier in pro baseball. But while blacks now seem to participate in most every sport at every level, many iniquities linger. The almost complete absence of any black Olympic-caliber swimmers, only a few black professional tennis players, and only one black-owned professional team. The source and scope of these inequities is the subject of Necessities, Racial Barriers in American Sports, a new book by my guest Philip Hose. Hose began the book after hearing about Ted Koppel's interview with Dodger executive Al Campanis, in which Campanis attributed the lack of any black major league manager or owner to their lacking the necessities. That controversial interview refocused attention on black participation in sports, a subject Hose has been interested in since childhood.
It's an area, racial discrimination, racial issues in sports, that I've always been interested in. Even as a little kid, I remember Sport Magazine used to publish biographies of sports heroes, and I bought them all. I ate them like bonbons, devoured them, and can recall that the portraits of white stars, I noticed this even as a kid, the Mickey Mantles and the Warren Spahns and the Bob Cousys were always full portraits. You learned something about their parents. You learned something about the towns in which they grew up. But I never knew anything about Ernie Banks's context, or I never knew anything about Hank Aaron, except that they always said he was a great wrist hitter and he had a great deal of ability.
One of the themes of your book that you bring out is there's always been a dichotomy between how people of color have been treated. Black players have always said that it's natural that they have ability. The white players have been always described as it's a cerebral function.
Yes, I think that's true. Most of the people, almost all of the people, particularly at the network area, but really throughout the media, who control, as the baseball disclaimer puts it, the pictures, descriptions, and accounts of the game are white. And I believe that they, through the years, have portrayed collectively white athletes as heady, gutty scrappers who overcome their supposed physical deficiencies through sheer Puritan effort, in contrast to black athletes who are supposed to be great natural athletes who are presumed to have a genetic advantage. And I think that these assumptions come out a great deal in the descriptions of the players. There's a good example in the All-Star game, the baseball All-Star game, a couple of months ago. Tom Seaver was the announcer, and Cal Ripken, the Baltimore shortstop, was at bat. And Seaver found this as an occasion to compare Cal Ripken, the hitter, with Ozzie Smith, who is a black shortstop who was playing for the National League. And he said basically that Ripken was a great shortstop, Cal Ripken, because he worked so hard at the game and because of his great intelligence, whereas Ozzie Smith had a great deal of athletic ability, and that was what made him a great shortstop. This was a contrast. Well, it's quite possible that Cal Ripken is a person of superior intelligence and that Ozzie Smith is a person of great athletic ability. But anybody who has ever read anything that Ozzie Smith has written about the art of playing shortstop knows that he brings quite an analytical approach to the game and speaks quite eloquently about it. And Cal Ripken probably has a great deal of athletic ability, too. So these are only partial portraits that you get of players through these stereotypes.
You have a couple of rules, sort of Philip Hose's rules. The nearer that a position is to where the ball is usually, it's less likely that a black will occupy it, and the more responsibility or control involved in a position, the less likely it is that a black will play it. Well, in Oakland, we now have Dave Stewart pitching for the Oakland A's. There's a quarterback who's chairing the Philadelphia Eagles, Randall Cunningham. Do you see this changing? I mean, do you feel that your rules maybe may have applied to another decade, or that you think it's still current?
No, I don't see it changing at all, or I don't see the changes as significant. If you look at the National Football League, on the last day of the 1987-88 NFL season, the Boston Globe did a survey of position by race, and they found that 62% of all the players in the 28 starting lineups were black. But a black was almost 50% more likely to be playing defense, that is, you know, reacting to someone else's plan, than offense or starting the action. And linebackers, the control centers of the defense, were about twice as likely to be whites as players at any other defensive position. The farther an offensive lineman was from the ball, the more likely he was to be black. 7% of all the centers, 23% of the guards, 46% of the tackles, and you're moving away from the ball, were black. And I think there have only been about 5 black centers in the history of the National Football League.
There's been this ambivalence has been historical in all aspects, I guess, of American life. But in sports, even at the turn of the century, there were team owners who would try to get blacks or Latinos on the team by either calling them Indians and giving them Indian names or by describing them as Caucasian.
Oh, that's true. Your literal skin color meant everything in the history of baseball if you were from Latin America. A lot of baseball fans don't know this, but long before Jackie Robinson became the first American black, African-American to play in Major League Baseball, there had been players from especially Cuba, but several other Latin American countries who had played at least a century ago. And the main thing that you had to be, if you wanted to be one of those people, was light-skinned. The first two of these players played in 1911 and were recruited by the Cincinnati Reds. And the owner, a man named Gary Herman, insisted that they come back with certification, even if it had to be trumped up, that two of these players, who they were particularly interested in, carried no Negro blood. And this was really the case until 1947, when Jackie Robinson broke through.
Well, even after that, and for many years after that, fans tried to deny that there were mixed teams. In your book, you reproduce one of the baseball cards from the chewing gum pack of Frank Robinson, in which he's depicted as a white player.
Yes, the baseball card companies until, in the 60s. Those of you who collect baseball fans may remember that on the back of the card in some years, there was always a little vignette, 2 or 3 drawings illustrating highlights of the player's career. Until the mid-60s, black players were portrayed as whites. I have a baseball card shown in my book, In Necessities, which shows a picture of Frank Robinson playing a game of basketball, a drawing of him with the great basketball player Bill Russell, because the two of them went to high school together. And there are Frank Robinson and Bill Russell playing basketball together, both of them with white skin and burr haircuts.
I understand you grew up in Indiana, where basketball was truly a fanatical sport that involved the entire community, and often as such, it brought to play a lot of the racial tensions that existed in Indiana and in other communities as well throughout the country. Do you still see sports as an area where racial conflicts sometimes get graphically worked out?
Oh, yeah. I think that there's a lot of racial tension in professional and college and high school sports. And I think it's fed by the organizations that recruit athletes and mold athletes. One of the real blatant remaining examples in sports of racial prejudice happens in basketball. Many fans may not know this, but almost all the colleges and universities in the United States actually pay for racial information. They pay for reports on high school juniors and seniors that have been prepared by scouting services. The reason that they pay for the information, just generically, is that there are too many kids for them to see, for the recruiters, for the colleges to see, so they need thumbnail sketches of the hundreds of kids that are out there to be recruited. But at the end of each of these thumbnail sketches, the scouting services put each player's race. They'll put a B for black or a W for white. Now, I interviewed 4 of these scouting organizations, the people who prepare these reports, and asked, why do you do it? Why do you need to provide such information? They say, because the coaches want it. Well, why do the coaches want it? 2 reasons, they said. One is the presumption that blacks are naturally better athletes, and if you get a black player, you get a better player. Secondly is the presumption that black alumni, or that alumni and fans throughout our colleges, will not pay to see an all-black basketball team, so you have to keep a couple white players on the end of the bench just to please the fans.
Your observation that alumni won't support teams that don't have a white player on them is in many ways the same attitude that affects a major corporate sports, where it's seen as a business, and in order to keep the fans happy, you don't want to have too many blacks on the team. Is that the gist of your
research? It is. It's basically a marketing issue. I think the basic feeling is that if a team is a winner, someone will, almost any fan will support that team. But if the team either doesn't have isn't a winning team or doesn't have a tremendously charismatic player, a Michael Jordan or a Magic Johnson, then it's unwise to have an all-black team. There is the feeling, and it was supported by research done, which I presented in this book, by two researchers from the University of Southern Illinois who found a superior dollar value on a white player of equal skills. In the NBA, if you look at the end of the bench of many of the NBA teams, you will find huge white players, players that I think most people in the NBA will admit, although perhaps not on the record, are there mainly because they're white.
It kind of gives a whole new interpretation to tokenism, doesn't it?
It's white tokenism, and basketball is the first sport to achieve it.
Well, Philip Hose, I want to thank you very much for coming and being with us on Fresh Air today.
I want to thank you, Sedge.